Welcome to Angel's Cup Coffee Hunters Podcast, where we talk about coffee, taste, and everything in between. I'm Jeff Borak, the founder of Angel's Cup, a coffee tasting subscription that lets you try up to 208 different coffees every year. If you're listening to this podcast the week it comes out, we also have for sale on our website the Roaster Competition Box. The Roaster's Competition Box lets you try the same coffee roasted by four different coffee roasters, so you could really get a feel for how the coffee roasting process makes each bean taste unique. This week, we're talking to Spencer, the roaster for Peixoto Coffee, one of our favorite roasters, and Ken, the 2018 Cup Tasters Champion. It's going to be a great conversation, so buckle up. All right, welcome to episode number 13 of the Angel's Cup Coffee Hunters Podcast. This week, we have two very special guests. First is Spencer Adakidis from Peixoto Roasters. He is the roaster there. And we also have special guest star Ken Selby. He previously worked for Visions Espresso. He's now doing a coffee consultancy business. And he is the 2018 U.S. Cup Tasters Champion. Welcome to the show.
Ooh, thank you.
let's kick this off by going one at a time. We'll start with Spencer. Can you tell us about your background in the coffee industry?
Yeah, kind of just a Peixoto Coffee. Started out as a home roaster, a home brewer. Decided that a coffee job sounded pretty cool after that. Peixoto Coffee was opening up, and I actually came across them on Craigslist, crazy enough, and applied and hoped they would pick me up, even though I had no real experience. And they did. So I've been there ever since. It's been about 3.5 years now. Started as a barista, did like some wholesale stuff, and then moved into roasting as soon as I could. So now I'm the head roaster and the green coffee buyer, and it's been a great journey.
Wow, all that in only 3 years.
Yeah, it's been a lot of progress from nothing to here. I was roasting on a fresh roast SR500. It's basically like a little modified popcorn popper type roaster. Nice. And I was just buying stuff from Sweet Maria's, and yeah, just going at it. I bought like 20 coffees right off the bat, and I was like, I just want to try everything.
Right.
And yeah, I thought that was the best way to do it. So it was a ton of fun.
So how did you start roasting at home? Like, was that always an interest, like a hobby that you liked?
Tina, coffee, the whole thing, I just kind of sped right into everything. I randomly came across it. I think it was a Reddit thread that said like coffee is a hobby. And I was like, oh, that sounds kind of interesting. So I started looking into it, and I just saw the brewers and whatnot. So went and bought an AeroPress and a little hand grinder right away. And I think I bought probably two bags of roasted coffee before I thought maybe I could do this. I could probably roast. And so I just ended up buying a roaster right there. I had no real idea about like coffee as a hobby or roasting as a hobby before that. I was just kind of like, I think I could roast coffee. And so I basically just bought the roaster and tried. And yeah, I just started roasting like crazy at home and giving coffee to my family and to people I knew, and try to get them to like it with me.
You didn't even start with a popcorn popper. You went right through like an actual roaster.
Yeah. I looked at how to, you know, what the best starting point was, and a lot of people said that. So I was just like, I'll go for that. Has some control, not really any now that I know roasting, but back then I thought like, wow, I'm doing stuff, you know, I can control this.
And what did your friends and family think about the coffee?
You know, not many of them are coffee drinkers, so they kind of were like, oh, yeah, this is great, but we don't care about coffee. My mom was nice enough to drink coffee with me, and she says that, you know, my coffee is the only coffee she can drink. So yeah, I guess I transformed her to a coffee drinker, but only my own, I guess.
And how about you, Ken? Where did you get your start in coffee?
Yeah, I got my start in coffee actually through Starbucks. Well, so when I first moved to Grand Rapids when I was 21, I the first coffee I ever really started drinking was from Madcap, and I was blown away by it. And then just being in college, I needed to have a college accommodating job. So I was working at Starbucks because it was right near my campus, and then kind of stayed there for, I think, 2 years. And then once I graduated my undergrad, I worked as a financial consultant for a bank because I had to pay off loans. But then I went back to grad school in Houston and wanted to stay in coffee because it was super accommodating, and then knew I wanted to only be in specialty coffee. So then I just started working as a barista with specialty shops, and then kind of just kept moving along from there until I didn't want to do grad school anymore after about 3 years, and then thought I was pretty decent with coffee. And so I just stayed in coffee and then wound up moving to Seattle last year and then kept working in the industry.
Nice. When you were working at Starbucks, did you ever tell them that you were secretly drinking Madcap coffee?
Yeah. It was no. So Madcap was, they're kind of the thing in Grand Rapids. I mean, they controlled pretty much all of the coffee shops were using their coffee. And so everyone that I worked with anyways knew about Madcap, and they would go and drink Madcap anyways. I mean, it was definitely, Starbucks was definitely just the job we were working at.
Great training though, right?
Yeah, no, it was definitely the start to everything. And then, so where I started at, they actually for a little bit still had the manual machines, but then segued out immediately after. So I got like a taste of it and then stopped. And then it wasn't until I moved to Houston that like I actually started working with semi-automatic machines and actually figuring out how to dial in espresso and brew coffee better.
And then how did you two guys meet?
We met in Seattle. Was it during the SCA show or right after, Spencer?
I think it was before SCA, right?
Well, in 2017.
Oh, it was probably in the middle. Yeah, it was right after that one. I think I came in the summertime just to visit Seattle, and I was just going to random coffee shops and kind of wandered into this one in this kind of odd neighborhood called Royal Drummer. And I was like, oh, this shop's kind of cool, and we kind of stopped in there and saw Ken at the bar and just started talking to him, gave him some coffee samples that I had on me, and he immediately just pulled me shots of the espresso. He's like, we've got to pull this coffee right now. And he started dialing it in for me and brought me like probably four shots. And we were just talking away about coffee and whatnot. And it was kind of a cool little experience between us two.
This was your home roast of samples, or this is when you were already working for Peixoto?
Already working for Peixoto. This was about last year around this time.
Yeah. It was because the first connection was when we found out we were both from Arizona, and then the coffee that you said you had also was a Sidra, and so I was talking about how the first Sidra I ever had was from Madcap, and then just started pulling out shots with you.
Yeah, ton of fun that first meeting, and then we've just been kind of talking ever since. And then you know I was gonna go up to Seattle for comp and SCA. And we had like an Airbnb planned, and Airbnb just fell out. And I'm like, hey Ken, I know this is like we don't know each other that well, but can I come stay at your house? can I come there? Because we have nowhere to go
with your friends.
He was nice enough. Yeah, and he was nice enough to let us come stay there. And now we've been a lot closer ever since then.
How many people did you crash Ken's apartment with?
We had three guys come and crash with him. So yeah. We were sleeping on the floor and whatnot. And
that was last year's competition, or that was this year's?
This is this year.
This year, wow, okay.
But this year you guys did the cup tasters, right?
Yeah.
Have you guys done the other competitions, like the other roasting ones?
You did roasters, right, in Reno, Spencer? Because I did Brewers Cup as well.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, I was 10th place, I think, or something like that in regional. So I just was outside of the top six that got to go. But I did pass through with cup tasters with Ken.
Before we get into the competitions, I just want to get a little bit more stuff out of your background.
Okay.
Okay.
Abby's jumping ahead.
I was just curious.
So So Spencer, you've been with Peixoto since the very beginning. What is experiencing their growth been like?
It's been wild, man. A lot of it feels like I'm like a business owner. You know, we're thinking of like what to do next all the time. And man, when we first started, we were all kind of clueless about specialty coffee. I mean, it was all of our beginnings. So we've been really just growing together and just trying to do the best we can.
Can you put into perspective what your growth has been like?
Yeah, I mean, we started out kind of just doing what a guy had told us. So it was basically like, this is how you pull shots. There's only one way. Don't weigh it out. Don't do anything. Just grind it into a portafilter. Yeah, just push the button.
Let it go. Stop it
when it looks like this. same with like pour overs and whatnot. He's like, yeah, you just kind of keep pouring until it gets up to this line on the glass. And then you're good. And right away, I already was doing stuff at home. And I kind of was like, this doesn't sound right. I'm brewing better coffee at home. So that was our consulting before we opened. And so we started there and immediately started, you know, reworking all the stuff this guy is telling us. We assumed he had more knowledge than we got. And so, yeah, we basically started from scratch. We're just like, we got to figure out some recipes. So I remember just reading, you know, what everyone was doing at the time. And we start pulling a lot of shots and we buying scales and making sure our recipes were all in tune. And I'd say like the first 6 months was just figuring all that out, getting stuff in place. And then I would say after that, it was like, okay, we have things going well, things taste good. How do we make this efficient now? Because, we're running like a bunch of people on bar and getting drinks out. But I feel like, you know, we could probably do this with a lot less people and keep the quality where it is. So it was kind of like finding out how to make a bar flow work the most efficient way you can. After that, and we ended up doing that really well. I think we ended up shaving two people off our shifts and just trying to figure out how to make all this stuff work. And then I started, trying to help find good coffees. And then our green sourcing stuff was the big focus. And obviously what we're doing on our family farm in Brazil. So every year we try to find better coffees than the year before and improve our processes on the farm side. And so we're working with some new processing every year. We've done experiments 2 years in a row now on the actual farm processing. And then I'm just working on finding better and better coffees and building better relationships with farmers and importers. So
what are those experiments you're doing?
A lot of processing experiments, working with controlled fermentations, really trying to work out, like we just introduced like honey processed coffees to the lineup this year. Just trying to figure out all the ins and outs of what you can do with coffee and thinking of it outside of the coffee industry and more thinking of it like what the wine industry has done.
Nice.
We think there's a lot of things they've done over the years that we can take, and they've done a lot of experiments that are very translatable. And so we're trying to figure out some of the stuff that we can apply on the farm from that. And that's been some really interesting results on our last harvest, and we're going to implement, you know, as many as we can now. So
can you give me an example of what an interesting result was?
Mm-hmm. So this last, you know, Brazilian coffees, most people think of them as maybe nutty, a little bit of sweetness, herbal. That's kind of the standard flavor profile you can get, I would say. For us, the coffee we just did this last year was bright pineapple, tons of like white wine type flavors, really bright, clean, even had some kind of like cedar type notes, like some really interesting aromatics that I'd never really tasted before. some of it was spicy as well, in and out, depends on how you brew it. So just some really interesting notes that I don't think I've ever tasted in coffee. And actually, I gave Ken a bag of this coffee recently, and he's kind of tasted it as well.
Ken, what'd you think?
Of the recent coffee, it was in my mind, it was super funky. And the way I explained it to Spencer, he was kind of taken back about what I had to say, but it was very interesting. Also, the water quality will be markedly different than where it is in Arizona, but the major and interesting thing about it was the finish for the coffee for me. It was like weirdly heavy and like almost silky like, and it was just a very funky coffee. It was definitely one of the more funky coffees I've had.
Was it identifiable as a Brazil?
No, no, no. And what really shattered my idea of Brazilian coffees was actually just recently, before he sent me this coffee, was cupping coffees with him in the SCA at this producer's table. It's Deterra. And
yeah,
man, some of the coffees that they had and some of the processing methods that they had, the one coffee that really shattered my understanding, it tastes just like kiwis and cucumbers. And I was like, this is not right. This tastes so good.
It's almost like a fruit juice.
And from there, I was like, oh man, I came back, and the one coffee company that I'm kind of helping out with now, I was like, you got to contact this Deterra and like get some of their samples in and try these things, because they are weird and so delicious. very expensive, obviously, but very delicious. And then Spencer sent me this from his lot, and also blew my mind about what a Brazilian coffee is. So super interesting stuff. And I'm actually trying to, if I continue with when our friendship continues, I'm trying to get some of these coffees into people's hands up here too, just because it definitely shatters Brazilian notions of coffee. So it's delicious.
Spencer, what was the actual tweaks that you made to the fermentation process to bring out these flavors?
So it's a combination of time in the actual fermentation, temperature, what environment you put it in, and then actually we used a yeast as well. So it's a controlled yeast. So all those things together is really like the different variables we're pulling back and forth, and we're trying to control.
Is the yeast something that comes from typical coffee growing regions, or is it used in coffee production, or is it like a yeast from wine fermentation or some other sort of fermentation?
Yeah, it's from a different fermentation, so it's not a natural yeast that you would have, and I think that's why there is so many interesting flavors in the coffee. It's a very different, you know, it eats the sugars very differently, and it produces a lot of different esters and the fruity type compounds. So that's definitely, I think, the reason it tastes so different.
Ken, can you tell us a little bit more about your background and what you're doing now?
Yeah. So right now I'm working with a coffee company called Vachon Coffee, and it's owned by Don Loris. It's been around since the mid 90s, I think, or early 2000s, like 1998 or 2000. But so right now I'm working in coffee production with him and kind of helping with quality and getting coffees, sourcing different coffees and finding different coffees to get into people's hands. She's really wanting to push people or her coffee into the specialty market, like multi-roasters and cafes who just like want long-term relationships with a roaster. So that's what I'm doing now. And so also within that, kind of learning how to roast and manipulate coffees a bit better, and also being able to work with profiling and then work with the head roaster and find ways to roast coffees the best way that we can. And then I'm also helping with the wholesale and retail side, just kind of evaluating the processes that we have in place right now, and then also figuring out what's some good ways that we can streamline things and what are some good ways that we can make things more efficient and transparent with how we go about things, and then also kind of make things work more on a conveyor belt, from like sample roasting to following the same profile and kind of production roasting, and then getting that out into people's hands. So that's doing that part-time for now, and then also just practicing and hanging out in the community.
Cool.
Is that what your ideal job is that you wanted to do in coffee, or was there is there something else that you're really excited about or passionate about in the industry that you want to do?
So that's a really good question. I do want to get more. So for the past year and a half, I've pretty much have wanted to get into coffee quality production and wholesale. And I just want to be more hands-on with the coffee and wanting to do more with quality control and being able to work with kind of behind the scenes, what happens before we get into customers' hands. So ideally that could be with a green bean vendor or someone who is actually purchasing and doing quality control in labs and then also getting it out into roasters' hands. Or even more ideally, working with a company that is passionate about continuously sourcing good coffees and then providing good coffees and roasting good coffees for their customers, and then just working with them to kind of grow and expand their brand, and then kind of see every. I want to get a big vision of what the business looks like and how to go about it and how to understand it, and then the hope is that in due time I can set something up myself. Because I'll be going into it kind of blindly. I mean, really, it's only 2 years removed from grad school. I was like, I don't really want to do philosophy anymore, and I don't really have the interest to teach in college. So, in the past 2 years, I've literally just been trying to figure out more and more about coffee and what it would take, and kind of each part of the process to set up my own operations when I go that way. So doing coffee production, quality control, streamlining wholesale processing, all of that is a big understanding for me, and kind of a last piece that I want to get a working knowledge of before I jump into my own business.
If you had to give one piece of advice to somebody who is just opening up a coffee shop or someone who was in Spencer's position 3 years ago, what would that piece of advice be?
I think the biggest thing is kind of what Spencer experienced in the beginning, and that's being the person to ask why certain things work certain ways and why you should do certain things. And I find in the coffee industry, not a lot of people are willing to sort of ask why or ask for someone to give like good substantive reasons behind the things that they're suggesting that you should do. And I think if you get good substantive reasons, you can confidently move forward with the things that you want to have happen with your company, whether it being in roasting or streamlining processing or getting better labor management, all the way down to like ergonomics of your cafe and bar flow and bar design and how to manage your labor in a better way by simply setting up your bar to be efficient for your barista not to have to run around in circles. But really, it's just collecting information and getting the best understanding that you can while also being willing to kind of flow with things and go and run with the punches. So I'm a firm believer of getting a good understanding of what you're doing before you start confidently doing it.
Gotcha. And Spencer, what's your one piece of advice for somebody who's in your position 3 years ago? Someone who's just starting a new coffee shop or.
Yeah. Ken pretty much nailed it. The other thing I would say is just taste as much coffee as you possibly can from everyone and everything, and try it all. Figure out what you like, not what people are telling you is good. Because people get stuck in this loop where they're like, this guy likes this and I must have to like that because he likes it and he's good at what he does. But coffee is so subjective. I mean, you can find your own path and follow it and love it. And if you do that, you'll be successful in coffee no matter what. Just keep pushing the limits. There's no rules to this stuff. You can say like, I'm going to brew a 20 minute V60. And if you can make it taste good, then that's the way to do it. You know? So there's nothing holding you back. Just try things. Don't get stuck in the little boxes that people try to make, or else nothing's ever going to progress.
Yeah. No, I one other thing to kind of piggyback on that is, I feel like a lot of people are not willing to just own their brand or like what they want to do. And so there's a lot of kind of replication of what other people are doing and just trying to sort of mimic what they think is a good model to be profitable or to have a continuous stream of revenue. And so I think one of the things that would be a good piece of advice is be comfortable with the brand that you want and have while also being aware of what's out there, but yet owning kind of what you're trying to do and make that as clear as possible. Don't just be someone else.
Ken, can you think of any underrated brands that are doing their own thing and maybe not getting the recognition that they deserve yet?
Yeah, I think Camber out here in Bellingham, they are really good and they're top notch. And they're starting to get more recognized out here. They're a brand that's also just, they're kind of like a black label or like a high-end brand from Tony's Coffee. But yet they don't like let people kind of know that in a very positive way. Like they're trying to do their own thing. But the idea of their relationships is very much about relationships and establishing coffee shops and providing incentivizations for people to take their coffee and then just being very humble about what they're doing while also realizing that they have a good following already. They're not very bold or brash, but they're very like nice and professional, and they're not in your face either.
You said they're under Tony's Coffee?
Yes, from my understanding, they're like an offshoot of Tony's Coffee. So yeah, so that's most people don't know that, which is great because they don't try to throw that around as leverage or flack of to like customers or things, or they're very much their own thing.
Because we work with Tony's Coffee too. We ship their coffees, but I've never heard of that side of their business. So that's really cool.
And if you didn't know, now you know. Okay, so let's get into the competition segment of this show. 2018 US Cup Tasters Champion. Ken, you came in first place. Spencer came in fifth place. Congrats to both of you. Would you say the competition is more collegial or competitive? Like, are people working together? Are they on the same team? Or is it more like everyone's trying to win?
Well, personally for me, one of the reasons why I really like the competition is because you are just being by yourself and competing by yourself. Like, you're not... The people who are on stage with you, you're not even really competing against them per se. Like even if you were the slowest person on stage next to the other two people, but you all got the same amount of cups, that doesn't mean in the first few rounds that you don't get to move on. So that's an interesting component, but it's definitely more just a personal, individual, competitive feel to it where you're just kind of up there with your own palate trying to figure out what cups are the right cups. And then people are super supportive afterwards.
Yeah, I would say about the same. There's nothing really you can share in this. I mean, it's either you can taste or you can't, which is why I love this competition. You go up there and Ken could tell me like, oh, well, I thought about all this stuff, but it's if my mouth can't detect that, then it doesn't matter. So it's very singular in that way. But I would say all the competitors were super cool, you know, talking with all of them afterwards, and they all congratulated us, and there was no like, don't talk to me, we're competitors kind of deal. So
that's what I did to Spencer cool. At night, though, when he came back. He was like, hey, Ken, let's go out. I'm like, no, don't talk to me. I have to compete.
Ken was just blasting loud music all night, so yeah. I couldn't sleep. That's why I came in fifth.
Only in the living room, though. I like soundproofed my room and made sure that I can get some good sleep.
Nice. You're looking for flavors in there, or are you trying to taste what origin it is?
Yeah, I mean, on this one, it was more just taste. I would taste all three, and I would try to pick out something that was the most different, whether it be the sweetness or the acidity, and kind of focus on that. One of the two usually was pretty different for me, and I found that the easiest way to differentiate. It's not really like saying like I think this is from Ethiopia and this one's not or something like that. It was more like this tastes like bright lemons and this one maybe tastes like orange or something like that. And it feels like this one's different than the other one because of that.
Definitely don't look for flavor. I find that takes too much time and it will also kind of confuse you. Even within tasting coffee, I mean, you guys running Angel's Cup, you kind of know like there's such a wide swath of descriptive terms that are borderline synonymous, but then sometimes very different from like what it would taste like. And I think that you would get bogged down if you're like, oh, I'm looking for a tangerine flavor because that's what the first coffee gave me. So when I actually taste it, I work by the finish. So whatever the first cup that I taste, I get a representation of what the finish was with the coffee. And then I go to the second cup and see if it was the same or not. And then I go to the third cup and find if the second cup was the same as the first one, then the third one, I feel like there's a high probability it's not going to be the same. But if for some reason they were all similar, then I would go back and get a representation of the initial acidity from the first, second, and third cup. But I find that the finish is one of the clear aspects about coffee for me to discriminate which one is different or not.
So you guys are doing three at a time. You're grouping them by threes.
So Spencer, you look for sweetness and acidity, and Ken looks for finish.
Yeah.
I'm more like intensity of acidity and sweetness more than like, is it there or is it not? I'm a big intensity guy. So like, this is like more intense than the other one. Then that's usually the way I'm like, I think this is different. So I kind of back do both.
Yeah. What about if it's a coffee that has very subtle, the very subtle flavors, or like has that kind of softer feel to it? Like, then how are you going to describe the intensity on that?
Yeah, that's where you usually go to something else in mind. If it's like very similar intensities across the board, which is usually not likely, but sometimes it happens, then I'll go to like, you know, like a finish or something like that.
How different are the coffees?
The first round, I felt like four or five of them were pretty similar regionally, but then it tasted like there was a couple Central Africans and then maybe a natural. And that was the same thing for the second round a bit, but they're not all the same, but they're not drastically different.
Okay. Is it usually a completely different coffee, or do they sometimes do really tricky things like brew them at a different ratio or a different temperature or a different grind setting? I've heard that they could get really tricky.
That's a good question. They don't. So I know in Canada, during the cup tasters, they did two of the same coffees, but one was a Swiss water process. So it was a decaf. So they exposed that to them, but they didn't tell us anything about what the coffees were, how they brewed them, if they changed them. We don't know any of that information.
Okay.
Unless I just didn't see it. Did you see it, Spencer? Did they tell you?
No, it's completely blind. And I think they leave it that way. So year after year, you don't have like insights from how they did it last year and, you know, could figure it out maybe.
I think the only thing in the rules or regulations they have is the coffee all just has to be a certain Agtron reading, and they all have to be, at least I recall in Reno for the qualifiers, they had to be all washed coffees. But in finals, man, I swear there had to have been a few naturals on the table.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Is the Agtron requirement kind of on the low side? Is it all light roasted coffees?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part, there was a few in there that didn't seem like they were as light as the rest.
Yeah.
And there was like a cup, like I remember, I think like two triangles in the last two, or in the two rounds I did were both like that, where they felt like they were definitely a little darker than the rest.
Yeah. But that could have been one of those things where they actually just over-extracted it.
Very possible.
But that was one of the things that on each, so all, although we like have kind of like an order of operation for when we taste each round, there's one to three triangulation sets where you can just really look at it and know, oh, that's the black sheep, because you can just tell the hue of the coffee and you can go and taste it and it's like pretty definitive. You're like, yeah, that one's it. So that's another thing about it.
Does anybody ever just separate out the oddball without even tasting it?
You, well,
or is that considered bad form?
Yeah, it's actually against the rules. You have to taste all three, or else you just lose that round anyway. So
yep.
Oh, okay.
Or that would be great because you could. I guess you could just confidently move it forward, but then that would suck if really all it was one was just over extracted than the other, but really the third cup that looked like the one that was under extracted was the black sheep.
I guess you can play some mind games against yourself. How did you guys train for the event?
Basically just my normal cupping schedules at work. Do QC pretty much every day, green coffee buying, like sample tasting all the time. So didn't actually do a lot of triangles. I think I did like two or three sets the day before or the couple days before we left. But setting up triangles is actually a ton of work. Mm-hmm. You need so many cups to do it. So it's actually pretty hard to really set that up. So I just did my normal cuppings and kind of just try to stay in tune with my tastes. And yeah, that was all I really did.
Yeah.
And how about you, Kim?
I didn't get the opportunity to do much because working at the time I was working at Visions and we sold equipment and did training and stuff. So I wasn't working with the coffee company. So I didn't really get to do much cupping or training. And my girlfriend helped me with one triangulation about a week out and then that was it. But we didn't even have enough coffees for it. So she had to use like the same coffee on two sets of triangulations. And like on one of them, she just left three of the same coffees because she's like, oh, I didn't have enough on these other coffees. It's like, oh, so no matter what, I couldn't get it right. And like, I remember I was sitting there and tasting all three. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And like trying to figure out which one of them it is. And I was like looking at her. I'm like, are you sure you put a wrong cup in here? She's like, yeah, I did. And so finally, once it was done, she's like, yeah, I ran out of coffee with the other one. So that one's just all the same coffee. So you like technically got it right, but also wrong. So, but other than that, I didn't really have much, much opportunity to do training. And so I was pleasantly surprised that I did as well as I did.
Do you guys have a ritual before the competition that you do? Maybe like the night before or like the morning of?
Yeah, I always drink a beer right before competition. Good. I'm just kidding. I do not.
You cleanse your palate.
Yeah. I just drink like the hoppiest IPA that I can find, and I'm like reared up and ready to go. I just don't eat anything other than like oatmeal or eggs. It's kind of it, and drink a lot of water.
Yeah, I would say about the same. The water is the key. Don't eat any like crazy foods that are gonna overtake your mouth all day. I would actually say that the first day of cup tasting, I felt terrible. I mean, Ken saw me. We had flew in at like 3:30. We had to get on the plane, and that was the day of my competition. And so we were up since then and like slept terribly, like felt like nauseous almost right before. I had just super low hopes. I'm like, oh, there's no way I'm going to get these right. I feel terrible. And then ended up getting them all.
And then you
like,
killed it. Yeah.
Maybe I have to feel like this all the time.
No sleep is good for a competition, I guess, for
maybe,
you.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you take a bunch of decongestants? Maybe that helped.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Actually, that is one thing I do, though. I do a nasal like drying spray because being in Arizona, I do that day and night actually, because if you don't, your whole like nasal passage just dries up and I can't taste anything like that. So that is something I do on the regular, but not anything different for competition.
So a little bit off topic from a competition, what is the weirdest flavor profile that you guys have come across when you guys are tasting coffee, or anything that was interesting or really like surprised you
during the competition or just in general?
I don't know, just in general.
I don't know.
One that really surprised me was this coffee from 90 Plus, the green coffee importer, exporter. George Howell has one of their ones, and actually his barista won the Brewers Cup with it this year. But I had that coffee a couple times this last year, and that is probably one of the most wild coffees I've ever had. By far the most complex, probably has a good 10 different stages to it. As it cools, transforms in the cup multiple times. And it has this flavor that's almost like a cognac to me.
Wow.
Like a really nice cognac, has like a lot of cherry, a lot of florals, crazy sweetness, like higher than I've ever tasted, but also the acidity to match it. If you have a chance, I would try out that coffee if they're still selling it, because it is totally worth the money. I think it's like, I don't know, $50 for 4 ounces or something, but it's worth every penny for that, because it will blow your mind.
Which coffee is that?
It's from 90 plus. I think it's lot 308, I want to say. It's the one that the George Howell girl won for in Brewers Cup. I can't remember her name exactly, but she just used it to win Brewers Cup. If you look up her presentation, everything, it's the one she used. And George Howell did an amazing job roasting that coffee, and 90 plus did just a crazy job processing that thing.
Yeah, I haven't had much opportunity to try a lot of 90 plus coffees. I've only had probably three or four that like I knew was a 90 plus, and maybe I had a 90 plus coffee it just wasn't brewed well, but so it would have been unbeknownst to me. But yeah, I haven't had anything that's too wild. The one that I did have, oddly enough, was George Howell's, and I don't know which one of his geishas it was, but it was definitively different in a mouthfeel that I've ever experienced in an espresso. And it was like very clearly, so people describe some espressos as pillowy or like cloudy. And that was the first time that I'd ever experienced a coffee that was very pillowy and felt like it was rising and sort of like settling softly on my tongue. It was very weird, while also tasting like Earl Grey tea, which is supposed to be like kind of dry and straining a little bit. But outside of that, I haven't had a lot of encounters with some really great coffees. I hope I do get some encounters with some really great coffees like that, though.
We were thinking about doing a 90 plus black box for Angel's Cup. I'd like to do that, but it's hard to get our hands on the coffees. Spencer, do you guys ever get and roast any of those? Because we could work together on a box.
From 90 plus estates, or just like 90 point and up coffees?
From 90 point estates.
Have not yet. They're mostly geared towards competition. And the prices of those coffees is ridiculous. I would love to.
This might be a stupid question, but what green bean volume do you have to buy to get those bags? Do you have to buy like a normal like 70 kilogram bag, or can you get smaller?
Yeah, you can get pretty small amounts. I think their lowest is even like 22 pounds, but that's at like $250 a pound. So it's like there's just not a market for that.
That's insane.
Yeah, if you're competing, it makes a lot of sense. If you want the best coffee in the world, it makes a lot of sense. Or if you're George Howell and you can sell it. But for us, we couldn't do that. I wish we could, but we can't do that.
Yeah, we sort of tried and failed a little earlier this year. We had we sourced the four number one Cup of Excellence lots from four different origins. It was roasted by Maruyama, and they shipped it to us from Japan. And the box cost $250.
Yeah,
it was $250 for a black box, which is 1 ounce of coffee. Uh-huh. And we had a cupping flight, which is 32 grams of each coffee for $100. And we were able to ship like 5 pounds, maybe like 20 pounds total.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say there was zero market for it, not enough for it to actually make sense for us to try on a regular basis. But I think if those coffees were shipped to the United States and roasted by a U.S. roaster, that would have you know, made our costs a little bit more reasonable. Because air shipping things from Japan is pretty expensive. And I think that with a 90 plus coffee, if we tried to do like a 90 plus box, I think if it was roasted by a US roaster, it's possible we could ship like in the range of 20 to 40 pounds, especially if it was during the holiday. Like in the holidays, we do a geisha box. And this year we did all Panama geishas. The box cost, I think, $75, was it?
Right.
And we sold like 250 of those. So it was pretty good.
I definitely think there's a market for people who just want to consume the coffee. There definitely is that interest, but I think Spencer maybe was referencing that there's not much of a market for roasters to, like, a lot of roasters who will be like, oh, I want to spend this money on this coffee because.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't think it would make sense to sell it on shelves in a store.
Yeah, because they have to push it in the cafes and stuff. Like, it's crazy. Websites.
Yeah.
But if you guys ever stumble across something crazy and you get small quantities of it, we could work on something together. Because
we're definitely going to have a cool holiday copy this year. So I'll let you know on that one.
Sweet.
I don't think it will be quite that insane, but yeah, we'll definitely have something good. I can only imagine buying one of those 90 plus, you know, bags and then putting it on the shelf and watching that thing get old. I'd probably cry.
I would just... I would spend my own money on it at that point.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, that's a good thing. We could pre-sell things and we could figure out exactly what demand is. And so you don't really take any, you wouldn't necessarily have to take any risk. You know exactly how much we're going to sell. But
one, it's really cool. Two, you get to have some of the best coffees. And three, it's like a shared investment that people are doing together to ensure that, like, you know, even if not a lot of money is made, not a lot of money is lost.
Right. Okay, so you guys are both very, very accomplished in the coffee industry, and it seems like you've gotten there in a pretty short amount of time. Who would you say helped you get to where you are today? Who deserves a shout-out or some credit?
For me, I would say Jeff and Julia, the owners of Peixoto. I mean, I wouldn't be anywhere without them. So amazing that they picked me up with no experience and let me do my thing and learn. So that's an amazing thing. Yeah. So Jeff and Joey, they're husband and wife. The whole thing, you know, this whole idea of crop to cup came from the reason that Julia, as her dad, is basically growing coffee, and they've had a farm in their family since the 1800s. So the whole thing came from her wanting to preserve that legacy and that farm. And have an outlet for it in the States. And he's also, he's growing specialty coffee, and it's been going to the C market for years, and that's just a shame. So they're really trying to get it all into the US market here and do amazing things. So that's, Joy has been working with that for a long time. She's had this idea for many of years, and they've been, you know, trying to figure out how to implement it and how they could get the coffee here. And so they finally figured out, like, they want to do a shop and they want to roast and they want to do the whole shebang. So it's kind of what their idea was. Jeff comes from a engineering background. He actually used to do rocket guidance. So he shot rockets up into space. And Joya was a lawyer in her past life. And they both were doing that for 15 years. And actually both just left their main jobs to follow their dream and to do this whole coffee thing. And so it's been pretty inspiring to watch them go through it, leave such, you know, cushy jobs, you know, ones that you could probably do for the rest of your life and be just fine, to do something so not cushy, tons of work and not nearly the pay, and just because they truly love coffee and want to preserve that legacy. So it's been pretty amazing to watch that happen before me. They were both actually working at the current or their past jobs when they opened, so they could keep the shop afloat. And so I got to see them transition out of that and do it full time. And yeah, so they're definitely the, you know, my two big people in my coffee career that I would not be here without them. I would also say Tim Hawk, he's actually my roommate. And a guy I work with at Peixoto, me and him kind of started at the same time, and he was actually a customer at Peixoto, and we just ended up talking. And I remember one of the first experiences with him, I was talking about things I had tried, brewing methods and whatnot. And I told him I had never tried a siphon, how cool it looked and how I wanted to try it. And this was like a week into knowing Kim Hawk. And the dude just brings me a siphon and says, like, go take this home and play with it. And I'm like, I don't even know you, man. Like, you're just going to give me your siphon. Like, what if I break this thing? And he's like, ah, just do it. Go have fun. Like, learn it. I know you're super interested. And so ever since then, we've been like super cool, like learning everything together. Huge growth, I would say, between us. He's a guy that always strives for the best. And I like to do the same. And so we have different ways of getting there, which is really useful because we can then say, like, how did you think of this? Like, we came to the same conclusion, but we got there two different ways, and we can kind of bounce off each other and learn a lot. So yeah, I would say him for sure. My girlfriend as well, always been supportive. She was a coffee industry girl before, and I get to basically bounce any crazy ideas off her, and before I tell anyone that will think I'm insane. So she's good. She's amazing for that kind of stuff, and always pushing me to be better and supporting me through what I do. So I'd say that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. For me, it's, I haven't really had much of a community or folks that have been, that involved. And that's kind of partially my constant reorienting of career choices. I mean, for when I was working at Starbucks or starting in my undergrad, I mean, I was also a youth pastor and then on track to go to seminary. And so like that was sort of the cohort of people I was with, and then decided to stop doing that, and then went to grad school and was doing philosophy. And that was sort of the cohort that I was working with, and then always like having coffee on the side. But I never worked for like a roasting company or a company that like source their own green coffee. I always worked for companies that just got specialty coffee. So we were trained baristas and like figuring out more, but I was never really a part of that culture. It was even kind of weird, like when the announcements were happening at this past SCA, and like you can tell how tight knit and how long people have been together in the specialty industry. Like when people were getting announced for like the new executive board for the Baristas Guild, or like we're getting announced for the companies that they're working for, everyone was like talking and clapping and knowing who everyone is, and like, oh, that's interesting. And I was kind of just sitting there like, I have no idea who these people are. Like, I don't know. I only know like some of these big, like heavy hitters, like some of the bigger names and like kind of where they come from, because I personally just read a lot and did a lot of informative gathering by myself. So I've kind of always been on the outside, but lately in the past year, there have been some people who have kind of helped and supported and been like, hey, you're really good at this. You should, you know, keep going forward with it. And so part of that is, you know, my girlfriend with Lizzie, and she's been in the coffee industry for far longer than me and is a wonderful barista herself, and has always trusted my opinion and thoughts on like what I think about coffee, or has always looked for me to give her input on different things with coffee. And I've always had the opportunity to talk with her too, and always try to work out problems with her. So she's been really great in that aspect. And then there's been a couple owners that I've worked for that just themselves as people have been role models to kind of emulate and look to for who they are in the coffee industry, just purely relationally for the type of networking and friends and relationships they have with folks. And that's Jill Killen over at in Seattle, who owns a three shops out here and then is now setting up a roastery finally in due time, hopefully. And then Dawn, the owner of Vashon, working for her because she owns Visions as well. She has been phenomenal herself and has definitely been in the industry for decades. I think going on 3.5 decades now in total. And then there's just been a couple there's been a couple companies that, like, unbeknownst to them, I've really have tried to kind of follow in the footsteps and watch their progress. And that's been Madcap and Onyx. And they're kind of the two teams, whether they knew it or not, that I was like, oh man, I really like their coffees, and would always try to like find ways to be more informed through what they were doing and what they were offering. And so that was kind of nice. It kind of came full circle this year when I got to compete against Madcap and talk with him. And then also hang out with the Onyx team and talk with them. But yeah, even my family, like none of them even knew that I like what they knew that I drank coffee and was working in coffee. But it wasn't until I put my first interview out from winning the Cup Tasters that they're like, oh, look at what my son did. And like my grandma's like, I guess my grandson's pretty good at tasting coffee. How cool is this? And so they were all like shocked to be like, this is a thing. We didn't know that this was a thing, that you did this as a thing. And I was like, yeah, that's what I do. That's what I tried like saying a little bit more. So yeah, so I'm definitely looking for, I guess, to be more involved with that community and more involved with people like Spencer and having friends and long-term relationships. And I think it's well worth it. So that's kind of what I've had along the way.
Where would you suggest people who want to make friends in the coffee industry go?
You can try, I think Spencer and Kim Hawk are great that they found that relationship when him going into the shop. And so weirdly, I have a few friendships from that, but they're like older gentlemen who just like would always come in the morning to the cafes I worked at and they would sit and chat with me, but it was about not just coffee, like politics and religion and things. And so they've been, I guess friends per se, but yeah, try to get into a specialty shop and like hang out with the baristas. And ultimately I think a lot of people just have to have different passions, hobbies, and interests other than coffee. And that makes it easy to also find friends within the coffee industry.
So we're winding up. The end of our interview here. One last question for each of you. Ken, I guess we'll start with you first. What's next on your coffee journey?
I am currently just tasting a lot of coffee, working with a company, exploring options for kind of long-term career opportunities, and just training for Worlds, which is quite a long ways away. But I guess now that I have the opportunity to train and the opportunity to compete in Worlds, I should take full advantage of it. So I am. So I'll be doing trainings for now until Worlds in November.
Is Angel's Cup going to be a part of that training regimen?
Yeah, no, actually, I hope that I can send out some. I'm trying to send out some coffees to you next week to hopefully also kind of get into there and hopefully get a subscription as well and start tasting more coffees.
Nice. Yeah, you broke our streak. We had 2 years in a row where the U.S. Cup Tasters champion was an Angels Cup subscriber.
Oh, I'm so thankful for you bringing me on then. I did not know that. I feel like Spencer just threw me into the lion's den a bit, but I will get a subscription now, right after this.
We don't have any merchandise, but if we get some before November, we're going to send you a hat or like a pin or something to wear. And you're going to have to represent us as well as the United States at the Worlds.
Will do.
Where's the Worlds?
In Dubai.
Oh, okay, that's in Dubai.
Oh, yeah. Jack Tailboy.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Where don't open that can of worms, Abigail. Spencer, how about you? What's next on your coffee journey?
It's probably going to be more involved in the farm side of things and origin and a lot more trips in that kind of way. I have a lot of people I've been working with that want me to come down, and I'm working on getting an assistant roaster to help me out so I can actually take some time off, because turns out if you have to roast coffee, you can't really ever take a vacation or else the coffee doesn't get roasted.
Yeah. We have not had a vacation in 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, I could take a couple of days, but can't do much more than that. So I think my next adventures are probably on the farm level and going, hopefully helping some processes on the family farm in Brazil, and maybe going down to Colombia. I got a couple of friends there that keep on telling me that I have a place to stay, and I got a guy in Costa Rica that wants me to come down. So I think that's probably going to be my next journey is, and kind of one I've been wanting to do since the beginning. It was always my intent to start traveling and actually getting down to the farms and seeing where the magic's made, and hopefully help like introduce some new ideas. I think that, I mean, that's where all the quality starts, and that's, you can't really get better quality throughout the rest of the process. You can only withhold it. So I want to be a part of creating the quality and making the quality higher at the farm level, and teaching teaching, you know, a lot of these farmers that they don't have the resources that we have, things that I've learned and things that we've experimented with. And I would really love to, you know, transfer knowledge in any way I can. I'm a teaching is a fun thing for me to do. So I've always just wanted to learn stuff myself and then simplify it enough that people can understand it and transfer it and hopefully get everyone into coffee, because it's just such a high skill cap thing. And it's kind of daunting for people when you tell them like all the different steps at first. So to make that a little easier for people to get into it on any level, at farm or roasting or just on the bar, you know, always wanted to do that. So that's kind of my overall goal. I think sometime farther into the future, I'd love to do consulting where I can go down the line and kind of like have experience on every single level, and anything that someone wants to know, I can give them some insight of what I've done in the past. And that's the overall goal, just teaching any way I can.
Do you have any advice for how people could find a good consultant if they're looking for one?
You know, I don't really know of any good consultants off the top of. Yeah, we had the one consultant, and then we're like, well, I guess we're consulting for ourselves past that. So yeah, not yet. Hopefully in the future, that's a bigger thing that happens. I know there's more specialty people, like there's guys that will teach you how to roast. I know there's guys that will teach you how to run a bar. You're going to pay a pretty penny for most of those guys. But I don't know anyone that's a broad consultant.
Pretty much what I find is people kind of reach out to barista champions or people who've competed and ask for their advice on setting up a shop or doing various things in their cafe. I mean, I know kind of Matt Perger and the whole Barista Hustle group, they work a lot with consultation and help, but also I'm pretty sure they're probably going to be expensive and not based in the US. And then Scott Rao, same thing. He does a lot of that. But yeah, I find a lot of people just go towards what industry leaders are, like competitors or champions, and they essentially become like the consultants and help people set up their own shops and kind of get things moving forward.
Would you guys say that barista or coffee competitions are a good career path for people to pursue as a stepping stone?
Absolutely. I think, especially if you can, I mean, the reality of it is if you compete well and do well, a lot of people are, I mean, it only adds to your pedigree in the community. So I definitely think competing and then also just being a part of the industry is just a necessary thing for a lot of folks if you're not kind of carving or blazing your own path.
Yeah, I think the same as well. It's a great way to just meet other people in the industry as well. Even if you come dead last, you go to regionals and you meet these guys that are coming in first and you talk with them and you realize that they're just normal people and they're nice and they just want to help you and you can ask them questions. And I think that's huge. The networking thing is bigger than winning in a lot of ways for me. You know, getting up on the board does something for your career. You know, obviously people, it gives you some validation. But the people you get to meet and create relationships with last your whole lifetime in this stuff. And I think that's a big way to meet other people that have that similar interest and get more involved in the industry. I would also recommend anyone that doesn't feel comfortable competing to judge, because it gives you such a good insight on this kind of stuff. And it really can teach you how to compete later. And you get to meet all these wonderful people, and judging's awesome because you get to just taste all the greatest coffees in the world, and they presented it the best possible way, and it's like there's a win-win to me.
Okay, so we're gonna wrap it up here. One last thing before we go, Spencer, do you want to tell our listeners where they can find you or Peixoto Coffee if they want to follow up after the call?
Yeah, the Peixoto Coffee is a PEIXOTO coffee. on Instagram. My Instagram is just Spencer dot Aidicatis, which is AIDUKAITIS. Follow me there. You can always DM me, send me messages if you guys are interested in anything I'm doing. Always try to respond to everyone that sends stuff to me and give any advice I can.
Super. And Ken, how about you?
Yeah, I am on Instagram, and my name is it's not my actual name, but it's my tag is a Columinus period human, and you can always DM me and send me a message. Also, I'm available by email, and that's my name at KenSelby89@gmail.com. And also with Vashon Coffee, you can find us at VashonCoffee.com. And if you have any questions or anything that are interested in or kind of want to talk about with me, or if you have interest in competing yourself or kind of the process of doing that, I'm definitely here to talk and give as much feedback or suggestions as I can, or help you in the process along the way.
Amazing. All right, guys. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to the Angel's Cup Coffee Hunters podcast, a show about coffee, taste, and more. This episode was brought to you by Angel's Cup, a coffee subscription that lets you blindly taste up to 208 coffees per year. Also, if you haven't already done so, join us in our Roasters competition box where you get to be the judge. We only have 85 boxes available, so make sure to grab one now before we sell out. If you love us, and if you love coffee, don't forget to hit subscribe and leave us a review so that others can find the show.